This is it. It's our chance to shine. I want to start with beautiful words written by journalist David Brooks, very brilliant guy, about a decade or so ago when he was on kind of a spiritual quest. About once a month, I run across a person who radiates an inner light. These people can be in any walk of life. They seem deeply good. They listen well. They make you feel funny and valued. You often catch them looking after other people, and as they do so, their laugh is musical, and their manner is infused with gratitude. They are not thinking about what wonderful work they're doing. They are not thinking about themselves at all. When I meet such a person, it brightens my whole day. Notice the imagery of light. They have a kind of an inner light. It brightens my day. But I confess I often have a sadder thought. It occurs to me that I've achieved a decent level of career success, but I have not achieved that. I have not achieved that generosity of spirit or that depth of character. A few years ago, I realized I wanted to be a bit more like these people. I realized that if I wanted to do that, I was going to have to work harder to save my soul. But of course, we're not able to make ourselves shine or save our souls on our own. So I want to look now at these wonderful words of Paul to the church at Philippi in the second chapter, from which the whole idea of shine comes for this series, and think about how is it that your life might shine this day. Paul writes, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose." A quick word here as we think about shining and how do we do that? How do we change? People sometimes wonder when it comes to spiritual growth, what's my role in that and what is God in it? And I'll find it helpful, kind of a boat analogy, that sometimes people think spiritual life's like a motorboat where I'm the one that makes the boat run, I got to produce the power, and no, that's not quite it. And then some people kind of go to the other extreme and they think it's like a raft. God does everything, I do nothing, I'm passive, I'm a raft, I'm just holding on to the raft. But that's not it either. So interesting, Paul here says, continue to work out your salvation. There's lots for you to do, for it is God who works in you. It's much more like a sailboat. Now, if a sailboat's going to move, it's not going to move on my power. It will take the wind. And of course, Jesus quite famously describes the Spirit as wind. The word for spirit in both Hebrew and Greek is the same as the word for wind. So if the wind's not blowing, if I'm not discerning it, then I'm not going anywhere. But a sailor is not passive. There is much to do to adjust and trim the sails and direct and guide the boat. There's a constant interaction between the sailor and the wind, and spiritual life is that way. Continue to work out your salvation. For it's God that's at work in you. When we even produce desires in each other. When we talk about, I've experienced this, or I want to become that, it has a way of inspiring us, making me think, I want to do it. Well, God's able to do that. When you have a good desire, God's at work in you. So continue to work it out. He says, with fear and trembling, a word about that. It is not saying that God is kind of a mean character, and so I have to be afraid of what God might do. Jerry Hawthorne in his commentary says that it's actually a stock phrase, and it had to do with people in the community, in the people of God, living with respect and reverence toward one another. It's not, there was an old movie, Cold Comfort Farm, and this real bizarre sect of people, church, where they would gather together and they would quiver, their form of worship. They thought God was so scary, they would just come together and literally quiver. There was a big sign in the back of the church, "The world will burn, but we will quiver." God is not creating the sect of the quivering brethren. but I recognize that I'm apt to do damage to other people, and so I want to approach them with fear and trembling, with respect and with reverence, and with God as well. And then Paul goes on, do everything without grumbling. Now let's just pause there for a moment. How's that going? Paul says, do everything without grumbling. What does that leave out? So if you want to shine, a good place to start today is right here, ixnay on the umbling gray. My Pig Latin is not great. I'll make a distinction here too between two different verbs that sound quite similar, but in the Bible, they're very, very different. And there's a huge difference in Scripture between grumbling versus groaning. Grumbling, we'll talk about the people of Israel grumbling in their tents. Grumbling is something that I do that creates factions. It involves envy. It involves self-pity. I indulge in a spirit of grumbling. I grumble about God, but I shut God out of it. So there's a whole attitude, posture towards life, towards God, towards other people that breeds factions and dissension. Old story of a guy who gets rescued living on a desert island, and he shows one building, that's where I slept, and another building, that's where I ate, and another building, that's where I went to church. And they saw another building, and they said, what's that building? He said, that's where I used to go to church. Because the story of church splits, and so factions goes all the way back to the church at Philippi. And that's why Paul has been talking in the Christ hymn about the attitude of Christ, the mindset that we are to have. And part of what that means is that spirit of grumbling, which is so destructive and so contagious. 1 Corinthians 10:10, Paul actually writes, do not grumble as some of them did and were killed by the destroying angels. That's a good reason not to grumble. Now, to groan is also to name what troubles me, where I am suffering, where I am grieved, but I invite God into it. And the Psalms are filled with groaning. And we're actually commanded to groan. And of course, in Paul's letter to the church at Rome, he talks about how all creation groans and we groan. And the Spirit groans. God enters into our suffering. So to invite God into our lament, our suffering, our confusion with a heart that is open and a spirit that is courageous, that we're to do with great honesty and great courage. But grumbling, this real destructive behind people's back. When it talked about Israel grumbling in the Old Testament, it would talk about them doing it in their tents. And so it's a way that is divisive. So today, no grumbling. See how you do with this one. Just run an experiment in a grumbling-free day. If you're not sure how you're doing, ask somebody who's quite close to you, who's around you a lot today, how did I do on the grumbling scale today? Do everything without grumbling or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure. Children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation, then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. Then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. But even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with all of you. This is somebody with a remarkably radiant inner light. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. So now one more word about shining as we're invited to shine. We are not able to make the shining happen. It's interesting, even when Jesus talks about being the light of the world, he says, not make your light so shine, but let your light so shine. How does this happen? Well, let's go back and take a look at a man by the name of Moses. You might remember, Moses also had a history with grumbling, where the people were grumbling about the food they were having to eat and how they were being treated. And he ends up going to God. Was this my idea? Did I create these people? Did I give birth to them? That I have to nurse them? My life's not going to be any better than that, just take it right now. The one thing Moses gets right about that is he brings it to God. He turns grumbling into groaning. But that's not all he did together with God. The book of Exodus, it says, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face. as one speaks to a friend, there's something deeply personal and intimate about what God is doing to Moses face to face, and something happens to Moses' face. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hand, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant. They were afraid to come near him, but Moses called to them, so they came, and he spoke to them. This is the life of the radiant face. It's very interesting. Karen Lee Froop, I think, wrote a book some time ago called Why Beauty Matters. And she writes about how at a wedding, if there's one word that's normally chosen to describe the bride, it is radiant. Very often, she was radiant. If there's one word to describe the groom, it is, there is no word. Nobody cares how the groom looks. Maybe that's because we live in a society that tends to be somewhat sexist and reduce women often to their appearance in a way that it does with men. That's a topic for another day. But she writes about how there's research that indicates when someone is deeply in love, when somebody is experiencing that in a very striking way, there are, of course, physiological changes. We'll talk about people who are blushing. The capillaries actually get closer to the outer edge of the skin. So in a very real sense, there is a kind of glow. It's like a physiological reality. Now, what happened to Moses was he came into the presence of God and experienced that great blessing, which is also named to Moses and to Aaron to give. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you. I want to know the God of the shining face. I want to be in the presence of a God and know his love towards me is like that of a bridegroom and a bride, or like a grandparent with a little grandbaby. So today, no grumbling. Today, work out your salvation with fear and trembling simply by being with and speaking to God. Wherever you are, doesn't have to be in some kind of formal or pious way when you look at what God has created, when you are doing your work, because God invited you to have dominion together with him, when you're with other people, because God says, wherever two or three are gathered together in my name, whatever you do for the least of these, I'm right there. You've done it with me. Today, don't focus on your own flaws and inadequacies. You have been called by the God of the shining face. Right now, his face is shining on you. And your face is getting a little radiant. This is your day to shine.
Hey, thanks for joining us here at Become New, where you can receive about 10 minutes of teaching every weekday to help you grow spiritually one day at a time. When I was watching that episode, one of the things that came to mind were people in my life, my spiritual growth journey, that radiate an inner light. Do you know anyone like that? Is there somebody in your life who comes to mind when you heard that David Brooks quote? If so, I encourage you to put them in the comments so that we can cheer you on and celebrate them. Also, if you've got a prayer request, we would love to pray for you. You can let us know, you can text it to us or email it to us. All of our contact info is in the show notes. Be sure to do that, because if you're going through something and you need support, you don't have to go through it alone. We would love to come alongside you and pray for you. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.